Tinsley, Ms. Lowe again, and Ms. Reckness.
Yes, sir.
All right, you may approach if you would. We're going to do, we've allotted 40 minutes for oral argument here. Ms. Johnson and Ms. Reckness, Mr. Reckness can split that between you as you determine, and then Ms. Johnson and, I'm sorry, Ms. Tinsley and Ms. Lowe could split. Before we begin, we do have one, I want to clarify one matter. Mr. Reckness, I appreciate your getting that response. It's my understanding that you no longer represent, you and your firm no longer represent Madison County Department of Social Services?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you for that. All right, you may begin.
Thank you, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Pamela Johnson. I am the attorney for Janet Wright, who is the maternal step-grandmother of the two children, Ethan and Ethan. Our argument is very simple, and you've covered some of the factual basis in the prior argument. Termination of parental rights, as I said many times, is an extremely critical decision. It's one of the most important decisions a court can make. And there's a very precise statutory scheme, 16.1283.
The court must. Johnson, let me ask this fundamental question. I've gone through the appendix and the record, and I can't find the basis by which the rights have any legal claim to the child.
The rights were the prior custodians of the children.
Where can I find that in the record?
They were granted custody by, it was a removal from the children from their mother, Ms. Robinson.
Is that part of this proceeding?
No, it was not.
There's nothing in the record that establishes why either of these people have any legal custody to the child?
There was an abuse neglect proceeding in Fauquier County in 2007, and I am not sure whether or not that is in the appendix. But that is something that's been referred to.
Where does that leave us? If it's not in the appendix, if the appendix does not contain anything that we can look to determine whether these people have any legal right to the children, what is that? How do we, without that?
First of all, they were the custodians, and that is stated many times in the foster care plans. And
from our perspective, it's just as possible that they were custodians of convenience, an informal entrustment, if you will, by the mother when she went off to jail, in which case they would have no standing to appeal anything here.
I guess I'd have to echo Ms. Kangan. I would have to check the appendix, but I believe that is in there. It was from a 2007 order.
Right.
And so
I haven't been able to find it, but it's a voluminous appendix, I agree.
It's a voluminous appendix.
And all right, proceed.
All right, and just to clarify, that was shortly after the younger child, Troy, was born. So he did, in fact, live almost his entire life with Mr. and Mrs. Wright, and the older child was about two when he went to live with the Wrights. As I was saying, there is a precise statutory scheme, though. In order to terminate parental rights at the end of a foster care case, the court must first approve a permanency plan that states the goal of adoption is in the best interest of the children. Only then can parental rights of a parent be terminated, and the department is correct that the grandparents do not have parental rights, although they had custodial rights prior to foster care. There is also a very precise right, 16.1296, for parties to appeal an order, a decision of a juvenile court to circuit court, and they have a right to de novo appeal. Now, what happened in this case, in the circuit court was under, and those are very precise statutes designed for the purpose of the 16.1283 for the purposes of foster care. The statute cited by the department, the 16.1106.1D, was used to prevent the grandparents from putting on any evidence in the circuit court case, is a general statute that talks about cases when parties don't appear in circuit court on an appeal. And we would argue that that is a general statute. It would not take any precedence over a specific statute governing termination of parental rights and the order that the court needs to make findings.
Do the grandparents have any right to complain if Department of Social Services chooses to place the children somewhere else?
They would have the right to appeal, yes.
Under what?
Oh, under any, under a dispositional order. A party can note an appeal, and they were party.
This, I take it you're suggesting this is kinship foster care?
Well, you mean if the children were placed back with the grandparents?
Well, no, when they were with the grandparents, that they were placed there under 63.2, 900.1 kinship foster care?
Mm-hmm. And given custody, though, in the dispositional order of the court. From the Fauquier County Board.
So there's an order in the record giving them custody.
There is your order. Apologize.
Well, let's one at a time. Well, you can respond. We'll have the same question of you.
Mr. Rockness has located the order, but I was correct that it was in the record. But and could you repeat your question, ma'am?
Well, that was my question.
Okay. So it could be considered kinship foster care, but they were in a dispositional order. They are actually granted custody. So that is what gives them the legal rights to these children.
Right.
And that is our argument. I would like to save some time for rebuttal.
All right. Let's see. And I think I've got, excuse me, I'm having trouble keeping track with all of this without the timers. All right, you have a total of 14 minutes remaining.
All right, thank
you. So you can, how much time do you want to reserve for rebuttal?
Say 4 minutes.
4 minutes. Right.
Is it the total time?
Yeah, total time.
So
your argument and your rebuttal.
Okay. So you've got 10 minutes.
All right, sounds good. Save some.
All right. Help us out with the reference to the
Here, may it please the court. Your Honor, the appendix.
How do you pronounce your last name?
It's pronounced Rockness.
Rockness. Got it.
Excuse me.
Thank you.
Your Honor, on page 307 and 308 of the appendix, volume 1, you'll find an order transferring custody to the rights. If you look on the page 308 specifically, it says, upon disposition of the petition, the court orders custody of the child transferred to Jimmy Lee and Susie Wright. And that's by
this is what page of the appendix?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, 307 and 308 of appendix, volume 1.
Thank you. Go ahead. Proceed.
Your Honor, also, the foster care plans from the beginning of this case were always to return home, and returning home was to return to the rights. So when that was eventually changed in the Madison Juvenile and Domestic Relations Court, when the court affirmed the new plan, which was the goal being adoption, that the rights appealed that decision, and that's why they were in circuit court on that day, prepared to go forward. Both of them were present. They had evidence, witnesses, and were prepared to go forward on why the plan shouldn't be changed, why the plan should still remain to return to their home.
The trial court ruled that effectively the grandparents' custody was based on the parental rights of the mother, was derivative from the parental rights of the mother. And those parental rights having been terminated, then there was no longer any custodial rights to the grandparents. Why is that an error?
It's an error, Your Honor, because the specific statutory scheme says what needs to be taken up first is the change in the foster care goal. And once that new plan is approved, with the goal being adoption, then you can move to the termination of parental rights. In this case, both those things have been done in the juvenile court, but they had both been appealed. So the proper order that the circuit court should have taken it up was the change in goal first, because if there's no change in goal, if the circuit court says, no, we shouldn't have changed that goal, that this goal shouldn't change, the goal should still be to return home to the rights home. They've been working with social services, they've been doing their best to get this changed around. If the circuit court said that, they wouldn't even have reached the issue of the termination of parental rights, because 16.1283 is specific that that must occur first.
I'm looking at the order. Assume Susie Wright is actually Janet Wright?
Yes.
The order says Jimmy Lee and Susie Wright. Okay.
Jimmy Lee is my client. I can't speak for Susie. I'm not sure. Jimmy Lee is definitely my client. So I don't. I won't.
Okay. I
didn't realize that was an issue. perhaps. But certainly, the children had lived with the Wrights for, I think, 5+ years approximately when they were removed. And all the foster care plan goals that are in the record, there's numerous of them, they're all approving until the very end, until it was changed, was all return home, and that was return to the Wrights. So when that goal changed, they appealed that, and they are ready to go forward on that day in court, sitting there. And again, the statutory scheme says that goes first. They also have the right to appeal de novo from the Juvenile Domestic Relations Court. That's a statutory scheme as well. So two statutory schemes say, you know, they get to appeal de novo and they get to go first. 283 says they go first. The court said,
but
Ms. Woodward's not here.
But once the,
we're gonna dismiss.
I mean, we've got cases that say that once the court properly terminates parental rights, the fact that there was or was not appropriate change in goal is no longer of any moment.
I'm not familiar with those cases.
Once the court finds by clear and convincing evidence that the mother is no longer the mother,
sure,
then what's the purpose of reviewing the change in goal?
First of all, I'll say that in this case, the statutory scheme says that they need to, and second of all, they were there. The statute says they have a right to appeal de novo, and they had done that. They had done everything right. They were ready to go forward. They were still in this fight, and they had been from the beginning. They had made all the appearances. They were trying to work with the department. I understand that there were some psychological studies that gave the department pause on whether they could actually, you know, become effective parents anymore, but they were there and they were ready to go forward, and that has to go first. I mean,
all your client wants is his day in court.
Absolutely.
Not necessarily the end result, because he wants to be able to put on evidence.
Absolutely. And I mean, I'll also say, Your Honor, that in Tackett versus Arlington County, it's a case relied on by both sides. The interesting thing in that case is the court had already, in this opinion that's by the Court of Appeals, they decided, yes, the mother's rights were properly terminated by clear and convincing evidence. They also decided the grandmother, in that case, didn't have standing to appeal the termination of parental rights. But they went on in that case to take up the issue of her appeal of the change in foster care goal and spent a page discussing it. This court didn't say, no, that's mute. That's not even an issue. They argued it, discussed it at length. It's in that opinion. I can point you to that page.
What is the standard the court employs in determining whether to transfer foster care, say, from one foster parent to another?
Your Honor, to change the goal, so the foster care plan goal was return home, to change that to a different, preponderance.
My understanding, normally, and this is, I'll have to say, one of the more unusual cases that I've dealt with since my tenure on this court. Normally, the goal, return home, means return to parents, and not the foster care parents. And the foster care parents, I mean, the child was placed in foster care at the discretion of DSS.
They weren't in foster care. They were, their grandparents were their guardians, and it was not foster care.
Well,
I want to make that clear. So they were removed from their home on abuse and neglect.
Well, this dispositional order is on the underlying petition foster care plan.
Well, I mean, I know for a fact that they weren't considered foster care parents.
Well, they may not have considered themselves foster parents, but
I mean,
they were standing in loco parenti of the mother and the father.
I'll have to check on that and reserve for my rebuttal to answer that. But my understanding is they weren't foster care parents, that they were never transferred to the department's custody. They went from their mother. I don't know, if she ever even had custody. If she did, it was in the very first month of their life. Then they lived with their grandparents the rest of their lives. But so
I think we understand your argument.
All right, thank
you very much.
How much time is reserved for rebuttal?
You've got an additional 2 minutes if you want. Too many players. Let's see. You may begin.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Again, this case falls on whether the court abused its discretion, and if so, did prejudice fall on the appellants? And first of all, the appellants have never shown or even alleged prejudice on the record, in their briefs, or in the transcript. And it is their responsibility to provide this court with a record that shows that prejudice has been suffered. And without that record, it's very difficult, if not impossible, for a determination by this court if there's been an abuse of discretion and if there's been prejudice to the appellants.
Isn't their argument more on, in terms of a legal argument as opposed to anything else, because the judge wouldn't let them put on evidence? They had witnesses there, and the judge wouldn't hear it. So can't you prove prejudice by the fact that the judge won't let you put your witnesses on?
But they also have to show that in the record. And if you look at the record and the transcript and the briefs, there's never an indication of that being prejudice. All they argue is that it was an abuse of discretion by the court.
But the record clearly shows that the trial judge would not allow them to proceed forward with their case because the judge's focus was on the fact that the mother wasn't there.
Exactly. And
so how?
And they can't raise third-party rights, and the right to object to the dismissal or the withdrawal under 16.1106.1D would be the right of the mother to assert.
Help me with this. Help me understand exactly what the, this is bad, the rights, the rights of the grandparents. Help me understand where that comes from. What kind of rights do they have to these children?
Judge, as the court was pointed out in appendix, there is an order from the Fauquier County Juvenile and Domestic Relations District Court. The child was in foster care, and pursuant to the abuse and neglect finding, the court granted custody to Jimmy Wright and Susie Wright. Susie Wright is actually the biological grandmother to the kids, not the step-grandmother that Ms. Johnson represents.
Were these custodial rights only?
Yes, sir.
Would the court have the authority if it wasn't happy with the placement of the children to place those children with someone else?
Yes, sir.
Would the court have to make any finding to do that?
If the court is going to grant custody or placement with a relative, by statute, there are findings that the court would have to make, deliberate findings, and those findings are that these, whoever they're placing with, are willing and able to take care of the kids.
Are necessary to remove the children from that placement and put them with another foster care couple?
It's in the discretion of the department. If the department has the children in one foster home and wants to remove to another foster home, if that's your question, that is in the discretion of the Department of Social Services.
Okay. That was my understanding.
So where is that in the record? That was done by virtue of a code section or an order?
Just to make sure I understand your question, removing from the grandparents' home? The removal from the grandparents' home by Madison Department of Social Services was based on abuse and neglect by the grandparents on these children. So the authority for us as a department to remove from their home.
So if you had the authority, which I assume is at your discretion, to take the children out of the home of the grandparents and place them with some other foster parent, why do we have all of these proceedings about change in goal and return home and all of that?
And I think there may be some confusion. If children are in the department's custody and we place with one foster home, if we then decide that the children would be better off in another foster home, meaning approved foster parents, that is in our discretion.
Is that what happened here?
That is not what happened. What happened is that the children were living with Mr. and Mrs. Wright.
In their legal custody.
In their legal custody under the dispositional order from Fauquier County Juvenile Court. Abuse and neglect occurred in the Wright home against the children. The department investigated, did an emergency removal based on the affidavit that's in the court file. Court approved transfer of custody to the department based on that abuse and neglect petition.
And there's an order in the record that says that?
Yes, ma'am.
So they were in the legal custody of Jimmy and Janet Wright, or Jimmy and Susie Wright?
Jimmy and Susie Wright.
So where does Janet? Janet Wright is the step-grandmother?
Yes, sir.
And Susie Wright is the maternal grandmother?
Yes, sir.
So where is there standing for Janet Wright then?
I don't believe there is standing for Janet Wright.
Well, if the court authorized transfer of custody to DSS...
Yes, sir.
Why wasn't that the end of the proceedings as it applied to the Wrights? Why was it necessary then to amend the goal and all of that part of the termination proceedings?
If you look at the original disposition order from the Madison Juvenile Court on page 182 of the appendix, there was a concurrent goal. So there was a goal of return home to mom and relative placement being the Wrights or some other relative that may have come forward. We tried return home to mom with services. We also concurrently offered services to the Wrights to try to remedy the situation that led to removal. At that point, when we realized that they were not two viable goals, we moved to have the goal changed to adoption.
And where are these children now?
These children are with their foster parents.
Okay.
They've been in foster care
since
2.5 years.
From the Wrights?
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. And again, if the court finds, this court finds that the trial court abused its discretion in regard to the Wrights, there's no prejudice shown. In this case, as the court has already referred to, once a termination order or decision is made placing the child in the custody of the department for adoption purposes, the issue of change of goal is moot.
Well, if, yeah, except you've got two different issues here. You've got the custodial rights that apparently have attached somehow to the grandparents, and then you've got the parental rights of the mother. And the way you've proceeded with this, it looks to me like those are separate and distinct.
And if you look at the Tackett case that was referenced, in that case, the grandmother had a guardianship or a custodial right to the grandchild. And the court found that she had a right, an interest to appeal the permanency plan, but did not have a right to object to the mother's termination.
So isn't that what we have here?
That is exactly what we have here.
Grandparents have a right to appeal the change in permanency plan.
But once the trial court found that withdrew mom's appeal and found that the orders of the juvenile court were final, that means we have a final permanency plan with the goal of adoption, and we have a final termination order terminating the residual parental rights of the mother. At that point, the issue of the permanency plan is moot because that's by preponderance of evidence, and you have a termination proceeding or order terminating mom's rights by clear and convincing evidence. So again, once the court made the juvenile court orders final or indicate they were final, the issue of the permanency plan is moot. Because what if the court did hear it and still found that the termination was final? What remedy do we have for the grandparents? Rights are terminated. Their rights are then derivative of the mother. Any questions?
No, actually, that was helpful. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
But basically, just to confirm, Jimmy and Janet Wright were the ones taking care of them, even though the order for custody was to Jimmy and Susie.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
Thank you.
You have 10 minutes.
Thank you.
Pick up where you left off.
I will. And just in case the court is wondering, the dispositional order which made the original finding removing the children is in the joint appendix at 180 and 182. And the preliminary removal order that started this is on joint appendix 265. My concern as a guardian ad litem is pointing out to the court that the entire history of the legislative history for foster care has been to move to quicker and quicker resolutions to these cases. And in fact, just this year, we went from giving people 6 months from initial removal to become and heard on a dispositional plan to 5 months. So we see this ever-shrinking period of time in which we're trying to find permanency for children.
Except the General Assembly had before it a proposal to fix this problem by making the juvenile court the court of final disposition in these cases, and it chose not to do so. So we continue to have this built-in delay of the appeal de novo.
Right. I started practicing in this field in 1988, and that the idea of having the juvenile court be exclusive has been a gleam in all of our eyes for a long time. But it's also scary, because anytime you make a huge change like that, we are talking about one of the most fundamental rights. There are people who would not fight for their own freedom that would fight for their children. So it is one of the most basic human rights. But I propose that the more basic right is the right to be cared and loved for when you are a child. And for me, this case is so tragic because for us a year is a long time, but nowhere near as long as it is for a child. I keep coming back to the fact that if the grandparents had been allowed to go forward and put on evidence, assuming that they would have prevailed, which frankly I'm not willing to do given the state of the evidence, Ms. Tinsley's absolutely right. If the very next proceeding, 2 hours after they finished their presentation, was to go forward on the petition for termination, and the court would just say, well, the mother's incarcerated, she's not substantially remedied any of the problems that led us here. Once the termination was entered, there would be nothing for the court to do. If the case was remanded and the court heard it, they would then be left, well, what can we do?
But isn't their argument that there's a procedural defect here? Because the court's decision to change that goal was not supported by the evidence.
Right.
And without that change in goal, then you couldn't proceed on the termination.
But you could, because the termination with respect to the mother is a separate issue. She had an opportunity to be heard, and as you have pointed out, in fact, her counsel was there and could have tried to put on a case that day. So we've got two separate tracks. The mother's track contains essentially the pathway for the grandparents to even have a nexus to the children. If the mother's procedural path is correct and the court has reached the possibility of terminating her rights on the grounds that she has failed to substantially remedy the situation, what happens if the case for the grandparents is remanded? There is no longer anywhere else to go. There's already been a termination. There's been already an order to place for adoption. So we would essentially be totally ignoring that path to give them another crack at the apple.
But didn't they have rights of their own because of the Fauquier order giving them legal custody?
I think you're right in that Jimmy Wright certainly had a right to go down that path. He had done so, and he had exhausted his remedies. In fact, they were given nearly double the time that we would normally have given relatives. If you look at the time and the effort that was put into these grandparents' case, everyone tried, including the Wrights. I was very clear when we made the final argument that I think the Wrights tried. I think the problem is poverty and a history of abuse throughout the family made it almost impossible.
Let me clarify one thing that I didn't pick up on, quite frankly. Janet Wright is the step-grandmother.
Correct. She is the step-paternal grandmother.
Does Janet Wright have any custodial rights to these children?
No.
So is there any standing for her to appeal?
I would argue no. I mean, she has always been, I will not deny that she was a caregiver, that these children consider her their grandmother, but I think you're absolutely right. As a matter of legal standing, there is none.
Well, I think Judge Beals asked one of the other counsel this question, but I'll ask you. In the record, where is there a finding of best interest of the child?
If you look, the original finding would be, if you look at the dispositional record, on, I just gave you the site and lost it myself.
Is that the 180 to 182?
Yes, I think you're correct. The court makes specific findings regarding the efforts that were made and are necessary to retrieve the, the initial decision would have been made at the preliminary hearing, which is at Joint Appendix 265. And the court made a specific finding that the child would be subject to an imminent threat to life or health to the extent that severe or irremedial injury would be likely to result if the child were returned or left in the custody of his parents, guardian, legal custodian, or other person standing in loco parentis.
I love these check-the-box orders.
I do, too. I think the people who created them haven't practiced law very often. And then the court also made a finding that reasonable efforts have been made to prevent removal.
And that was all done at the juvenile court.
That was all done at the juvenile court.
The circuit court just washed his hands of the whole.
Exactly. And then when you look at the juvenile, I mean, if you look at 180, it is essentially 2 months later, more investigation has been done, and we have a dispositional order for each child.
I mean, I think everybody agrees that what was done in the juvenile court was done properly.
Correct.
Or at least procedurally correct, whether it was supported by the evidence or not, you can debate, but.
And you're.
I'd love to take that debate, well, because I think that's the easiest way to win.
And just to be clear, your point about the circuit court is it doesn't matter which option the circuit court took up first, because you're going to get to the same result regardless.
Correct.
That's your point about that.
Correct. Because the mother had no right to toll the progress of her case because of the grandparents' rights. The mother could not say, wait, don't make a finding against me because my parent, or at least my father, still has the right to go forward. She had no ability to raise that argument because there was no procedural error with respect to her, and she in fact did not raise such an argument via counsel.
Could she have raised it if she were present?
I don't think so. I think she would have had to come up with a specific statutory reason why she was not offered appropriate services, why she was somehow procedurally entitled to more. I don't think she could have simply said, someone else in the community has a right, and if they were to exert it, it would give me more time. I don't think she has
but
that
the
right.
The issue is not whether she would have prevailed. The issue is whether she's entitled to notice an opportunity to be heard.
Right. And but she.
And if a trial court denies a parent a right to notice an opportunity to be heard, it's hard to see how that's harmless or how you have to prove prejudice.
I would absolutely agree with you if they'd not given her notice. Remember,
well,
she is the person.
Is it's notice and opportunity to be heard.
Correct.
I mean, we do have a case, H-A-U-G-E-N, Hagen, mm-hmm. Shenandoah Department of Social Services, where the mother was cut off on a telephone call during the hearing, and the Supreme Court reversed and said she has she's entitled to opportunity to be heard.
Correct.
And that was denied her because she was incarcerated.
But there's a very big difference in that case. And this court, of course, held the opposite. This court held that she...
Yeah, we're wrong now and then.
What is fascinating about that case, though, if you think about it, that mother actually did make an appearance. She was trying her best to have her case heard, and it was cut off. And we don't know why. I mean, that's what's interesting about it. In this case, the mother was the appellate. She was the one that caused the case to go forward. She knew that she had instructed her attorney. There's ample evidence that she actually knew that the case was going to be forward, and she never attempted to contact her attorney. She never attempted to contact the court. She never attempted to contact the social services or me.
The last thing we have in the record, though, is she's incarcerated.
Right.
Which would probably be excusable.
Well, it would, except for the fact that she had an attorney there who was looking for her and couldn't find her. She had an attorney present. And I agree, having an attorney present is very different than having the mother present. But what happens if the court extends?
Didn't the materials come back that she was no longer?
A letter came back to Ms. Kangan, yes, ma'am.
Okay.
But let's think about, here's what bothers me the most. The reason.
Did that letter say she was released or just she's not here?
I don't know.
I think it was just not here, or not in our custody or something
right.
to that effect, which could be released or could be transferred to another correctional facility.
Here's what scares me, and I'm a firm believer in let's look at the brass tacks. The reason these children and so many other children are in foster care is they have parents who aren't very good at fulfilling their obligations. That's the long and short of it. The reason for this parental termination was that the mother had failed to correct her past mistakes. You look at the record, it is full of mom not being there. She's not there, she's not there, she's not there. She's not been there in their lives. If we create extra burdens to require that parents have extremely well-documented notice, we may never get to a termination in these cases. These are parents, many of them, who are experts at disappearing from the grid.
Yeah, well, even the most unfit parent has a due process and constitutional right to notice an opportunity to be heard before someone takes their parents from them.
I agree.
That is written in our Constitution. So, you know, to suggest that a parent, just because they are unfit or irresponsible, has some lesser right is falling on deaf ears with this judge. Anyway.
Right. I understand, but she was heard at great length at circuit court.
All right, your time is
expired.
Thank you so much for your argument. Okay, Ms. Johnson?
Thank you.
I've got about 3 minutes left for you.
And I just want to clarify the identity issue.
Well, yeah, please do. Yeah.
Because Susie Wright and Janet Wright are the same person. The actual biological grandmother's name is Connie Darnell, and she formerly had children with Mr. Wright at some point in the past before Mr.
Well,
and Mrs.
Susie
Wright.
Susie slash Janet
yes.
Wright.
And the
is that
people,
in the
they are the
somewhere?
Same people?
I don't know that it's in the same people, but for example, on page 530, this is a notice sent to Mrs. Wright. It's sent to Janet S. Wright. In the Madison County proceeding, the one that we are appealing, she's always been referred to as Janet Wright or Janet S. Wright.
The order says Susie Wright.
I know from Fauquier. And she calls herself Susie, but I know her as Janet.
Well, let's put it this way. Nobody has raised that issue, so
okay.
So perhaps we'll just have to presume that Janet and Susie are the
thing. Janet
but
and
just
Susie.
To be clear, you're saying that even though the order says Susie throughout the transcript, it's clear that it's Janet.
It is. That's correct.
And they're one and the same.
They are one. They are the same person.
And they're the maternal
step-grandmother.
Step-grandmother.
And the maternal grandmother is Connie Darnell.
Okay.
And I did want to clarify one point. One of you perhaps said, would it matter what the circuit court did first, whether they heard the termination or the permanency plan? Yes, it does matter, because the statute says that you must approve the foster care permanency plan before you can terminate parental rights. So you can't get to the situation where we terminate mom and therefore grandparents are out of the picture. So because the court does have to hear the permanency plan first.
And that's by case law or by statute?
That's by statute. That's a 16.1-283A.
And it specifies that one must come
yes.
before the other.
Well, let me pose this. Suppose we affirm the trial court in the mother's case, Ms. Robinson's case, and we say that her parental rights were properly terminated and that the goal is now adoption. What relief can we give you? What could we do, or what could the trial court do, for want of a better term, if we remanded it back?
If you remand both cases back,
if we affirm on Robinson.
I think that probably we couldn't do anything, because if mother's rights are terminated, the grandparents claim through the mother.
Right.
However,
even on the legal custody issue, that doesn't help you, the fact that they at one point had legal custody.
They have legal custody, but they were not the adoptive parents, so they're, you know, mm-hmm. they weren't parents, so they
well,
cannot
that
appeal that issue.
That clarifies a lot.
It does.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Atkins? Can I ask you if you agree with that answer by Ms. Johnson?
About?
That if we affirm in the Robinson case and say the trial court did not err, that the mother's rights are terminated, the goal is now adoption. Is there any relief the trial court could give you if we remanded it back?
I don't believe there is, because Tackett, in that case, the grandmother in that case had custody. She'd been the guardian of those children, and you said there's no standing for the grandmother to appeal the termination.
So your appeal rises or falls on the outcome in Robinson?
It does, but let me say this. I know my time is short. The next proceeding, you asked Ms. Kangen what the next proceeding, and she talked about, oh, after they heard the permanency planning, then they could go to the termination parental rights. And that is not true. That's not right. 16.1.283 clearly says you've got to change the permanency plan goal. And there may be case law out there. You mentioned earlier that there was a case where they went ahead and they terminated parental rights, and they said, well, we never really addressed the permanency plan, but that's okay. But in that case, it just didn't come up. They went straight to that. But here, they were ready to go forward. They had appealed it de novo. They'd followed the procedure. That was a separate party. The rights were there, ready to go. And the statute says you've got to change that goal first before you can go to the termination of parental rights. And again, there was no the circuit court didn't find a preponderance to change it. They didn't even find clear and convincing to terminate parental rights. They just said, mother's not here, dismissed, okay? Again, two statutory schemes, de novo appeal and 16.1.283, which says this is what you got to do to terminate parental rights. And they've got to change the permanency planning goal. And you know what? The permanency planning goal had been to return to the grandparents, return to home. That's the only home those kids had known. That's the home from which they were taken. That was appealed, and they didn't get a chance to be heard on that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's a very complicated case, and I thank all of you for your participation.